care of your financial future. That's 496-5533. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC.
Website ad, take one.
Hey, I'm Travis Romano from G Stone Motors in Middlebury. We'd like to invite everyone to check out our web.
Hey, Travis, I just got a text message from my daughter.
Yeah, I heard.
What does TTYL mean?
Oh, are you still trying to figure out that phone? It means talk to you later, as in after we finish this ad.
How do you know all this stuff?
Did you download our new web app yet?
Web app? I mean, I can see the whole inventory from this phone?
Yeah, you can see our entire inventory right on your cell phone.
Cool. Did you know I could play Angry Birds on my phone?
Oh, never mind.
G-Stone Motors website ad, tank two.
Hey, I'm Travis Romano from G-Stone Motors in Middlebury.
Excuse me, Travis, do you know what WTAIT means?
No, but I know what WTF means. What is it this time?
We'll take anything in trade. How's that?
All right, give me the tag.
G-Stone Motors, your hometown Ford and GMC dealer where they take anything in trade. Route 7 in Middlebury or online at gstonemotors.com.
.244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about the election. Let's give a nice home Radio Vermont welcome this morning to John Walters. John is writing, blogging these days for the Vermont Political Observer. You can find him at thevpo.org. Used to work for New Hampshire Public Radio and has sat in this chair a couple of times when I've been on vacation. John, how's it going this morning?
Oh, fine, Mark. Just enjoying my second cup of Vermont Coffee Company coffee.
Right on. Do you drink it black or do you put a little milk and sugar in it?
Oh, I need a little bit of whitener of some kind.
So what happened on Election Day here? Why was this election 1 percentage point separating Shumlin and Scott Milne?
Well, first of all, let me just say that Scott Milne deserves all the credit in the world. I think he was the only one who saw this coming, and everybody laughed at him pretty much. And he deserves all the credit for running the race he thought he should run and finishing as well as he did. As for why we didn't see it coming, well, conventional wisdom was stood on its head. I think we overlooked the depth of Shumlin fatigue because we saw his incredible money machine and the Democrats' organizational machine. And I thought that would overcome whatever fatigue there might have been, or at least mitigate the effects of it. And it turned out that it doesn't matter how much money you got. As I said in my blog, money can't buy you love, and organization can't buy you enthusiasm.
What do you think the source of the Shumlin dissatisfaction is?
I think it's a whole bunch of things. I think partly it's the issues. I think the Democrats were extremely late to turn their attention to property taxes, and really didn't turn their attention to property taxes. They are promising to now, and they had better. And he failed to deliver a single-payer plan. So that left conservatives wondering what kind of a monster he was going to pull out of the basement, and making liberals wonder whether he was serious about it. And that feeds into the perception that Peter Shumlin is an inauthentic figure, and Vermonters love authenticity in their politicians. Scott Milne was authentic for all his faults, and he was, I think, an appealing alternative because he was unpolished.
You said you started off with a big fat compliment on the race that he ran, but is that really true? Is that really fair?
Well, I don't think that he was intentionally doing it, but I called him the Fred Tuttle of 2014, and I think there's a lot of truth in that, or I guess I wouldn't have said it, but I don't think it was a deliberate strategy. I don't think he went into it as a really articulate, cunning figure and said, well, I'm going to present myself as kind of a mumbler. But I think that made him an appealing figure, especially in contrast to Peter Shumlin. He was real. I'm not saying somebody else couldn't have done it better. I think, obviously, if Phil Scott had run for governor this year, he would have won pretty easily. nobody would have said that 6 months ago, but I think it's true now.
But here's the thing. If Phil Scott had run, I was talking to the lieutenant governor about that. I mean, wouldn't have Peter Shumlin have taken him much more seriously much earlier?
Well, that's true. I'm not sure what Peter Shumlin would have done differently. He spent, you know, $900,000 trying to defeat Scott Milne and Dan Feliciano, and it didn't do him a whole lot of good. But he certainly would have taken the race more seriously, and the voters would have taken the race more seriously. You know, I've talked to liberals who said that they either sat out the race or even voted for Scott Milne because they felt safe in casting a protest vote or skipping the governor's race because they were sure that Governor Shumlin was going to be reelected. I think in that sense, Scott Milne was a very safe vessel for a protest vote for people who might otherwise, who would otherwise have voted for Shumlin.
We're talking with blogger John Walters. He writes for the Vermont Political Observer. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Fair to say if Dan Feliciano didn't run that Scott Milne would be Governor Milne today?
I think so. You know, Milne finished 1% behind Shumlin, and Feliciano got 4.3% of the vote. It's hard to imagine a lot of the Feliciano votes going to Governor Shumlin. I don't think you can really say that Dan Feliciano was a spoiler. He had every right to run, and he had every right to stay in the race. It's hard to imagine that one-fourth of Feliciano's voters wouldn't have voted for Scott Milne in the absence of a high-profile libertarian. So, yeah, the basic question is, yeah, I think if Feliciano had not been in the race, then Scott Milne would be the governor-elect.
Go back here. Why do you compare Milne to Fred Tuttle?
Well, like I said, Vermont voters prize authenticity, and that can come in a whole number of different forms. I think Jim Douglas was seen as authentic. I think Bernie Sanders is seen as authentic. I think Peter Shumlin, who sometimes is authentic, I mean, he is a Vermonter. He's lived here a long time. He's lived here pretty much all his life. He is seen as inauthentic, whether he's being authentic or not. And, you know, Scott Milne, for all his faults, or perhaps, his faults contributed to this, was seen as an authentic political figure. And I compare him to Fred Tuttle because, as I said, he was a good vessel for a protest vote and a perfect foil for his opponent. You know, in the case of Fred Tuttle, it was Jack McMullen, the millionaire from Massachusetts who moved up here and tried to run for the Senate. And Peter Shumlin became the Jack McMullen of the race, which is about the worst thing you could possibly say about it.
All right. Let me take a couple of calls here. Let's go to Waterbury. Pat, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Just a quick comment. I think the big loser in this race was Phil Scott because In Waterbury 4th of July parade, he was asked why he wasn't running for governor, and he said it wasn't his time. And I think the Republicans really missed the boat to hold the governorship because they did not read the tea leaves correctly. So,
wow.
Thanks.
Phil Scott, big loser. I haven't heard anybody say that yet. That's an interesting. Thank you for your call, Pat.
Well, he won his own race. I think Pat is right in that, you know, I think if Phil Scott had run, he quite probably would be governor because, you know, Phil Scott is another guy who is an authentic figure. He presents as an authentic figure, and Vermonters accept him that way. And in that sense, he could have been a more polished version of Scott Milne or Fred Tuttle, if you will. I think, though, that Phil Scott is a winner in a couple of other important ways. One is he cemented himself as a huge vote-getter in his own race. He raised a whole lot of money, and he comes out of this race with almost $100,000 in the bank. If he wants to run in 2016 for anything, he will instantly be a very strong contender. And maybe more importantly, I think this election shows that he and Republican Party Chair David Sunderland are on the right track in terms of, you know, pushing the Republicans in a more inclusive direction. I think the fact that Dan Feliciano finished under 5%, even though he had the backing of some prominent Republicans, shows that that kind of candidate just doesn't appeal to a lot of Vermont voters.
Let's go to Northfield. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Hey, John, mm-hmm. your VPO.com.
VPO.org, but...
.org. Yeah.
Quite liberal bend to it.
Yep.
Do you report, I find it being quite singular in its message,
mm-hmm.
and I know you were eating crow for lunch yesterday.
happy to do it.
In your wild case of spin yesterday and today, because we talk about Darcy the hack spinning.
Yep.
Do you see yourself moving a little more to the middle, like the rest of Vermont, or do you see yourself staying way out there on the edge?
There are a lot of people on the left who don't really think I'm an authentic lefty because I actually favor some development and some, you know, I don't think everything corporate is bad, and I, you know, so I'm not a doctrinaire leftist. You know, when you're a blogger, you have certain limitations and certain freedoms. The limitations are I don't get paid. I do this on my own. the freedom is that I can write what I feel and what I think.
And not look for clickbait, you know, not look for clicks all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. I find your column interesting,
mm-hmm.
but I do find you're just as quick to jump out there and jump on someone, mm-hmm. and very almost as quick as the hack to try to spin what you said in the following days.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm honestly I have owned up to having been wrong about the election. I am doing my best to try to understand the election. I don't necessarily think that, and I'm honest about. This is how I feel about it. I don't think it was necessarily a move to the center. I think it was more about just Shumlin fatigue and a certain amount of disgust at Governor Shumlin, as it was about, you know, repudiating Democratic politics. I mean, you know, there were a whole lot of Vermonters who voted Democratic except for governor and lieutenant governor.
Yeah, you put out some numbers.
The Republicans won some races in the legislature. They did better than anybody thought they would, but they're still on the short end of big majorities for the Democrats. I think the Democrats do have to honestly reassess what they've been doing and how they do it, and what their priorities ought to be. I think they are out of touch with, you know, what I've called, you know, lunch pail issues and the concerns of their everyday people. To some degree, that means moving to the center. I'm a liberal. I'm going to represent that viewpoint. And even if I were unpopular, even if I lived in a red state, I'd still be writing the way I am. The other thing I'll say about this is I really wish there were some conservative voices in the blogosphere. We really lack that right now. And I would like to see, you know, 1,000 flowers bloom. I would like to see more conservatives doing what I'm doing, because I don't think I'm the only voice, and I don't think I have a you know, copyright on the truth.
Let's go to Eden. Bill, good morning. Bill, good morning. All right. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. You talked about what you think the Democratic Party's got to do. What do you think Peter Shumlin's got to do?
Start yesterday by, you know, owning up to the fact that he'd gotten out of touch and that he needed to reassess what he needs to do. He needs to take some time, as he said. He needs to refocus. He needs to decide who he wants to be and what his next political act needs to be. Right now, it seems like, you know, he has, you know, he's on his way out. You know, people are talking about him not even running for re-election in 2 years. I don't necessarily think that's true. I think he does need, he needs to ditch all the outside stuff, and he's already doing that. He, you know, he's going to step down as head of the Democratic Governors Association. He needs to stop the out-of-state travel. If he can decide who he thinks he wants to be as a politician, and but, present but that.
John, I'm getting creeped out as you say that. Decide who he wants to be. Talk about, you've been talking about authenticity for 15 minutes. God, I mean, good grief.
You know, I think that he has been distracted by and you know, seduced by his own seeming invincibility. And I think, you know, he thought he was unbeatable. I think to some, you know, somewhere deep inside, I think he thought that not only was he unbeatable this year, but that he would be unbeatable in 2 years and be governor as long as he wanted to be, pretty much. And I think now he needs to decide what he wants to do and then do it. And if that means continue to push for single payer, then he should do that. I don't necessarily think that Vermonters would reject that if they thought he was honest and sincere about it. But I think that's what he has to do. He will have to work with the legislature instead of talking at them. It probably means moving to the center. I don't think he stands a chance of getting single payer through in the next legislative session for sure. I think he needs to really figure out what Vermonters want from him and try to provide it. And if he can't do that, then he will be off the political scene, you know, sooner rather than later.
Do you think he would have gotten single payer through if he'd gotten 57-58%? Is it? I mean, has the election changed that?
He would have had a whole lot better chance, but, you know, legislators were already kind of queasy about it. Mm-hmm. He would have had to present a solid plan that would look politically palatable, and that would have been a really tough thing to do. As it is now, I mean, you know, legislators have seen people like Mike Fisher, who was, you know, a standard bearer for health care reform in the state house, lose. And they've seen Shumlin pretty much repudiate the polls, and Vermont Health Connect doesn't work. You know, I'm in favor of single payer, but I said before the election that Shumlin could not hope to get the legislature to approve single payer until Vermont Health Connect actually worked, and it still doesn't.
We're talking with John Walters. He's the blogger behind the Vermont Political Observer. Let's go to Eden Bruce. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Two things. One is I heard your guest say that a lot of people either stayed out of the election or filed a protest vote for Scott Milne, but I own a convenience store, and around the coffee pot the last 2 mornings, all I've heard is people that if they'd have known it would have been that close, they would have voted. and so it's just, I see just the opposite. And the other thing I'd like to mention is, as after talking to so many people over the last couple of days, it reminds me of the 1975 World Series that the Red Sox won 3-4 games over the Big Red Machine. If you remember, Carlton Fisk hit the big home run in Game 6.
Yeah.
And the Reds come back and won Game 7, but everybody looks at it as the year the Red Sox won 3-4.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
good.
That.
That's
Milne looks like the winner even though he lost.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. That's good.
Thank you.
John, you can use that for free, by the way. No copyright from the program.
I think Bruce has a point. I think that some Republicans did stay home. And frankly, you know, the Republican Party stayed home. You know, Phil Scott could have done a lot more to help Scott Milne. And, you know, State Representative Heidi Sherman was quoted in the Free Press this morning as saying, you know, I could have done more for Scott Milne. And I think if the Republicans had thought that he had a serious chance of winning, they would have gotten behind him. And, you know, It wouldn't have taken much to put him over the edge and make him our governor.
Imagine, you know, if Chris Christie had dropped a couple of hundred grand into Vermont. Let's go to Middlesex. Laurel, good morning.
Hi, this is Laura.
How are you?
From Middlesex.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm happy as a clam.
Because?
With the, how well Scott Milne did. Hey, I'm an old farmer lady, and I don't like that remark. I don't know what show that some person made about some hick farmer or something like that. Boy, that remark. And look how well he did.
Well, that was actually a comment that was made about Phil Scott on this program from a caller.
Oh, yes. Well, okay. Okay.
And I guess it
and
helped.
Well, I was just roaring mad. But I didn't call because I was so upset. But another thing, do you think that that fiasco of a land deal would have set some people off the governor way back when that took place?
Mm-hmm. John, what do you think about the Jeremy Dodge deal?
You know, I didn't think that it was that big a thing because I thought that the governor took care of it fairly promptly. But... Mm-hmm. In retrospect, obviously, I think it resonated with a lot of people. You know, it's a little thing. It's like, you know, Al Gore with the invented the internet thing, or, you know, John Kerry windsurfing. If a little thing seems to reflect a flaw in a candidate or a politician, that little thing can resonate far beyond its actual effect and become kind of a symbol for everything that you think is wrong with a candidate. And I think the deal with Jeremy Dodge, you know, Shumlin's neighbor in East Montpelier, who, you know, Shumlin was seen as taking advantage of, and I agree. I think Shumlin tried to take advantage of him, and I criticized him very heavily for it at the time. But I think that did resonate. And that sort of highlighted Shumlin's bad side.
Let's go to Williston. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. I think one of the reasons maybe you guys missed it so much is you underestimated the Vermont person and the voter and our intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You have a man that has been really challenged and has been a failure, really. I mean, look at Health Connect. Look at Human Services. I mean, he's not a good manager. He is a politician, yes. He is not a manager. And he's got a couple issues he can't get over. And these are the issues. And your guest just mentioned Jeremy Dodge. I mean, that, there should have been, that was a crime, really. And some of the other moral issues you hear people talking about, you know, a 58-year-old mate running around with a 29-year-old girlfriend. People in Vermont, that doesn't go. Guy, you know, and to Eric Davis yesterday, saying that his political career has been done, here's a man that had the big three backing him up, Leahy, Snelling, Sanders. And the vote was there. Jeffords got, he got 63% of the vote, yet it didn't go over to Shumlin because people smart enough. And so it wasn't surprising, I think, to the people out there in Vermont.
Well, but Tom, don't go away here. Let me ask you this. When you say, and I, you know, I appreciate, I think that we in the media deserve some criticism for missing the level of dissatisfaction here. But when you say that people like John or me, for that matter, underestimate the intelligence of Vermonters, I disagree with that. Because, and here's why. I mean, the prospect of people voting for another candidate is not strange to me. But to vote for a candidate who really hadn't taken any positions, I found to be a leap that was a little hard to believe. So help me understand that part.
Okay, so maybe, and that's probably why Milne didn't win, because that vote, they just didn't vote for Shumlin. And some of them went over and they did vote for Scott Milne. They voted for Feliciano and Emily and such. They just Spartans not voted for this man. Someone was runs this liberal circle. I'm a salesperson. I'm all over the state. And to me, this was not a surprise. Any you win, Mark, people, I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
Player is a manager, and he's personality issues.
All right. We're losing you here. I'm sorry. I wish your call was better, but let me get John to comment on what you had to say there. But I appreciate the call.
I think he has a couple of really good points there. Governor Shumlin has been a failure as a manager. He does best when he has a crisis and a big decision to make, like with Tropical Storm Irene. He obviously, not just with Vermont Health Connect, but with other aspects of the administration, his administration, his managership of the state has not been that good. I think those of us who follow the push and pull of politics underestimate that. I think that's the thing that people most want from their government is basic competence. That's one of the things that Scott Milne promised to try to do. And that's, Shumlin was seen as having taken his eye off that particular ball, and he's right. And I also think that he's got a really good point about, there is a gap between, people who cover politics and people who are involved in politics and the people. We tend to talk to the same people all the time. Political figures, other people in the media. One of the things that was striking to me that happened on Twitter on Election Day was that various reporters who were out in the field covering, at polling places, were seeing this wave of, it seemed like almost everybody they talked to either didn't vote for Shumlin or held their noses and voted for Shumlin, and they were really unhappy about property taxes. And it was like there was some cognitive dissonance there. The reporters kind of didn't know what to make of this at first. And it was really, when you're a reporter, you spend all your time either in the office or in press conferences or reporting on events that happen in the State House, reporters don't get a lot of time to be out in real life. And so that's a weakness of how reporters do what they do. And, I talk to people and I sit in my basement and I write stuff. I don't know everything. And I'm enjoying admitting I was wrong and learning from this. So that's what I'm trying to do, just like Governor Shumlin. I'm trying to learn from this and be smarter about politics and about Vermont.
Moi aussi. Are you okay on time here? Can we take a little more time from you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We're going to do our White House report with Ellen Ratner, then we'll get back to our discussion with blogger John Walters. He writes for the Vermont Political Observer. Kevin and Ken, hang on the line here. We'll get to your calls for John and, I guess, me as well, too, in just a moment. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. Let's say good morning to Ellen Ratner of Talk Radio News Service. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Both Mitch McConnell and the president had pressers yesterday. A lot of people think Mitch McConnell was much more open than the president. I actually thought the president was pretty open. It's very clear when Congress comes back next week, they're going to have to deal with three things. ISIS, ISIL, the president talked about that yesterday. They're also going to have to talk about the budget, which is not going to be easy, I don't think, even though it's a lame duck Congress. And thirdly, of course, they're not going to be able to deal with immigration at all, but they also have to deal with Ebola. And so that's really what's top of the hit parade this week and happening next week in Congress. There's still a couple of races that are undecided. Mary Landrieu's people are already putting out, this is our chance. We need to support her, contribute $5, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. What was the message that you heard from the president yesterday?
The message was that there are areas such as those three areas that we can cooperate and need to. There are some other areas that we can't cooperate or agree on, and he would use executive orders. That's what I heard from what he said yesterday.
What was the message from McConnell?
McConnell was we're going to cooperate with the president, and we're also going to work 5 days a week, and we're going to try and come up with ways that we can work together and also have a Congress, which is a Senate, which is much more open.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, that's sort of that is a top of the hit parade. The only other thing that's kind of interesting is the Defense Department put up a whole lot of new regulations about how people should be addressed, et cetera. And one of them has to do with the word Negro, which they say is acceptable. They walked that back very, very quickly after there was a hue and a cry, and it seems that somebody just really got involved in all of this insanity of bureaucracy.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ellen. I appreciate it. Ellen Ratner runs Talk Radio News Service out of Washington, D.C. Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815 and on the web at gmavt.net. We've been talking with John Walters. He blogs at the Vermont Political Observer. You can find him at thevpo.org. Let's go back to the phones. We've got a Williston next. Hi, Kevin. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Quick note. Do not believe it was a protest vote. I'll go to Franklin County. Corey's parent, a young kid, brought in everybody else on his coattails on the work he did. He brought a lot of kids into this race, middle-class kids that want to stay in Vermont, don't like what's going on. That was a loud, clear message. And he may have brought Milton with him on his coattails. That was, you look at Franklin County and how Franklin County went, I think you're going to see a bit of the difference on how politics is going to go in the state.
Okay. All right. John, let me have you comment on that.
Yeah. And Corey Parent finished first in a four-person race among people who were more experienced and better known, and he obviously ran a strong campaign. There were other people like that. I want to mention a guy over in St. Jay named Jansen Wilhoit, who finished second in the race for two seats. He's a Republican. And he overcame some very difficult personal circumstances. He has a criminal conviction in his past, but has, you know, made amends and now works as a public defender. And he ran a strong race, and he's going to be in the state house. He's a Republican, and I look forward to seeing what he does and what some of these young Republicans bring to the table in terms of a positive agenda to make Vermont a better place. I'd also mention a very different guy, but Fred Baser in the district where Mike Fisher was defeated.
Right.
Fred Baser is an older guy, a very respected figure in the community, and he spent less money than any of the other three candidates, and he came in a solid first. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table as well.
Let's go to South Burlington. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I did send an email to Governor Shumlin yesterday and congratulated him on his apparent win, but I couldn't help but carry on with my message and tell him that I hope that he is now really listening to the other half of Vermonters in this state, because it's clearly, to me at least, that he has not listened to all Vermonters, only those that are lined up with his agenda. I'm a seventh generation Vermonter. My family ancestors settled the towns of Wilmington, or settled in the first settlers in the towns of Wilmington, Jacksonville, Reedsboro, Stanford. Southern Vermont is my heritage, but I've lived here all my life, worked here all my life, now retired, and it's amazing to me how politics have changed in the state. When I look at the imbalance in Montpelier right now, there's only one side of the voice truly being heard down there. I mean, we may get a chance to speak, but it's for no good reason. So I challenge him to really listen to the other half of the people. When I heard his speech at City Hall yesterday in Burlington, I wondered if he had not read my email, because some of the things that he said were right in line with what I had prompted him to really take a good hard look at his past administration's record and really look harder at what's important to Vermonters. I mean, property tax values, cost of education. And even though I'm retired, I still understand the need for taxes and the cost of education, but it just seems way out of control, all of those things. And it just does not appear that Governor Shumlin has really taken a hard look. He's out of touch on all of those issues. Great politician, but as someone said earlier, not a good manager. He doesn't have his thumb on the pulse, and I'm hoping that he can do that. I'm a Republican, but Weber's in Montpelier is the head of our government. Needs to be listening to both sides and really needs to have his pulse on the what's going on, whether it's his human services, whether it's taxes, whatever it is. And he just seems to have been out of touch these last 2 years. So I would encourage Scott Milne to demand a recount. It's close enough. And maybe that'll give the Governor Shumlin a little more opportunity to think about what his next 2 years should amount to.
All right.
And I'll close it with that. So.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. John, what do you make of that?
Well, I think a lot of people in Vermont thought that Governor Shumlin wasn't listening to them. There was widespread disaffection on the left, quite frankly. And, part of it was things like the gas pipeline or wind energy. But part of it was that people who are, solid liberals thought that Governor Shumlin was, talking out of both sides of his mouth and traveling the country too much and saying what people wanted to hear rather than what he truly believed or what he really wanted to accomplish. When I was talking earlier about Governor Shumlin reassessing and, deciding what he wanted to be, I didn't mean that in the sense of constructing another fake persona. What I really meant was that he needs to decide why he's in politics. He needs to decide what he wants to accomplish and what he wants his legacy to be. And if he's willing to fight for that, I think that he will pick up support, whether that's single payer or whether that's tacking to the middle or whether that's, whatever. Vermonters have responded very positively to a lot of different kinds of politicians, from George Aiken to Bernie Sanders to Phil Scott to Jim Douglas. The key is that the politician is seen as being truly interested in doing what's right, truly interested in advancing the state of Vermont, interested in making government work as well as it possibly could. And if Governor Shumlin can focus on what he believes and why he's in politics and what he wants to accomplish, then I think he can have a good second act.
But if it's, John, if it's policies, that's one thing. You can change, you can refocus, reset,
yeah,
as the Free Press calls it. But if a chunk of your opposition is really about distrust and integrity, mm-hmm, is that salvageable?
It'll take a lot of work.
So what do you do?
There are some obvious things.
Bake sale for the,
the
neighbors,
maybe,
and the girls.
Maybe
you
should follow Phil Scott and do the job for a day thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend taking up race car driving, though.
Or a Wheels for Warmth thing.
Yeah. Well, there is a good side to Peter Shumlin, and there is a bad side to Peter Shumlin. That's kind of what makes him a fascinating political figure, is that he is a mix of very strong positives and negatives. There will always be people who don't trust him. What's happened, as he has seemed to be unbeatable and as he has traveled in national circles and, done all this, wonderful fundraising for himself and the Democratic Party, is that he's taken himself out of the loop here in Vermont, and his, not only him, but his entire administration is seen as out of touch. They've been very prickly with the media, and they need to cut that out. They need to be more open, and they need to serve the people. Whether Peter Shumlin can convince people that he really is on their side, I don't know. He's got a lot of work to do.
Let's go to Burlington. Mark, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I think obviously having Shumlin as standard bearer of Democratic Party caused him to pay a price. And, but besides that, one thing I do have a concern is the outside money that came in from right-wing causes coming in impacting the Republican Party. And so if we see a rise of the Republican Party, I don't think it's going to be a rise of the George Aiken, which you say socially politically maybe conservative, but very socially responsible. I mean, what the Republican Party used to be, at least a wing of it, when it dominated Vermont, was very supportive in social services, very supportive in bringing the community together, and certainly taking on big money. There were two wings of the Republican Party back in those days. One that was very money, the Ron Marble, others that were more common working people, and that was the difference with George Aiken. Now, what I'm worried about with all this outside money and these new stalwart Republicans coming in is the amount of money, nearly $300,000, that came in from the governor's whatever leadership conference out of Salt Lake City that impacted this. You know, if these new Republicans coming in are really going to be grassroots and principled, they should be refusing that money. But I think they have an agenda, which I'm very worried about. And so what has to happen, I think, is a true grassroots movement, whether it's Democrat, Republican, more likely progressive, that will really make this part of Vermont feel like it belongs. Because I feel like we have two Vermonts. We have the tourists, Vermont Life, Vermont, and then we have the rest of Vermont. And so the rest of Vermont is kind of getting a little bit keyed off, being isolated, and feeling like they're falling further behind. And I know Bernie was able to tap into people in Franklin County when he first ran in 1988. He lost to Pete Smith, but he won Franklin County because people were able to reach him. Mm-hmm. So I hope disgruntled Vermonters can look, that's my personal bias, can look toward more of a progressive renewal in grassroots, because what they're tying into with these this new Republicans, I find somewhat xenophobic, very much blaming, and very much pointing out all those people are freeloaders. I hear comments from a lot of native Vermonters, myself not being a native Vermonter, that really worry me. And I think the newer Republicans have a habit of playing into that fear. And that's happening, you know, Mark, it's happening in other parts of the country, and I like to think that Vermont is different, but we are getting that type of reactionary discussion coming into our political dialogue amongst Vermonters in our state.
All right, let me have John comment on this. I'm going to be interested to hear his answer if really the message is sort of to go further left here.
Well, that's part of what Mark said. And I think, you know, like I said, the example of Bernie Sanders is the example of someone who is to the left of most voters, but who resonates with voters and who seems to represent the real concerns of voters. So I don't necessarily think it's a left-right thing. I would love to see, you know, what I'm actually hopeful that Scott Mill and Phil Scott, those kinds of people, will create a new a different Republican Party that is more of a grassroots party and doesn't take its cues from outside the state. I think that's one of the lessons that the Republicans could learn from this election, is that they were stronger with a candidate who got very little money and spend very little money than they were when they tried to outspend the Democrats. And if they can, you know, if they can present themselves as representing the concerns of Vermonters, then they will be successful no matter who has the big money. I think Vermont is different than a lot of other places in that money plays less well here than it does elsewhere. And I think, you know, that ought to be the first priority of any politician, and it's easy to forget, but politicians are here to serve the people and try to make the government work as well as it possibly can.
We're talking with blogger John Walters. Got an email from Mary who says, "Hi, Mark, we keep hearing that Phil Scott didn't do enough to help Milne, but what did Shumlin do for Dean Corrin? He endorsed him and then distanced himself, I think, and actually showed Phil Scott in his own commercials."
He certainly did, and that's kind of an example of the kind of thing that people hate about Peter Shumlin, is that he seems to you know, say whatever he thinks the current audience will want to hear, and he did. You know, he often appeared with Phil Scott. At the same time, he tried to, you know, express support for Dean Corrin. I don't think Dean Corin would have won no matter what Governor Shumlin did, but he certainly could have done more, I think, to support Dean Corin. As it turns out, at least in this year, you know, how much was Governor Shumlin's support really worth?
It's a little like Barack Obama, huh? Amazing. Go back here. Somebody talked about Scott Milne should ask for a recount. Yesterday, it was sort of unusual. He had this, the media shows up. They're waiting around for 4 hours for him to come down and say what he's going to do and wind up with nothing but a slice of pizza.
And they had to run out the door to get to Governor Shumlin's press conference. It was kind of, when I was reading about that yesterday, I was thinking, you know, that's just Scott Milne. That's what he is. And, you know, he does what he wants to do, no matter what other people are going to think of it. And, you know, frankly, he's had a lot of success in his life in business and now in politics by doing what he thought he ought to do. And, you know, I think he's perfectly within his rights to wait until the votes are official and then to ask for a recount if he wants. We shouldn't be in a hurry here to rush to judgment. He should do whatever he thinks best. I think he's earned that consideration.
And it's going to go to the legislature anyway.
That's right. We won't know who's governor officially until January.
Take a quick break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. We'll get to your calls, Rich. Bill, we'll get to your calls right after these important announcements.
Folks, Dan Keene here, owner of...